And welcome to a very special episode of The Lowdown. Typically, we were doing it 5 days a week, and then we went down to one day. We could talk with the doctors and knew that we would keep this time slot open for when the school district started to make its plans and release its plans for reopening. There are already some school districts down south reopening to some fits and starts here and there, but we still have about a month away before the first day of school. I think we're maybe a little bit ahead, even though we're starting later than others. It feels like we're still planning on ahead. So in the studio with me, I have a lot of people. Don't worry, we're wearing masks. Everything is clean. And we have some good positive airflow going through the studio right now. So with me is Superintendent Larry Ledoux, and then why don't we just kind of go around and introduce yourself to the community. I'm just going to pot up everybody's mics, but we'll start over here to my left with Superintendent Ledoux.
Good morning. My name is Larry Ledoux.
I'm Kim Saunders, the Assistant Director of Special Services for the district.
I'm Carrie Irons. I'm the principal at North Star Elementary School.
Good morning. My name is Todd Burton. I'm the principal at Kodiak Middle School.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Smith. I'm the Director of Special Services for the school district.
And good morning. My name is Neil Hecht. I'm principal at Kodiak High School.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks to everybody for coming in this morning. Right. Look at that. 9 a.m. Monday morning. We're ready to go. Let's start off with a little session. Have you heard of something called ELI-5? Okay, it's a thing on the internet. It's like I think it's a Reddit kind of thing. It stands for Explain Like I'm 5, ELI-5. Okay, so school reopening, we've got several different components of this: high school, middle school, elementary school, early child education, special education, activities, sports, oh my goodness, village schools, different sites, homeschooling, virtual schooling, and we have about 56 minutes. So ELI-5. No, I'm just kind of give us your 2 minute or your elevator pitch, your ELI-5. What is the plan right now? Who wants to take that one?
Well, I think the plan right now is to open our schools in the safest manner possible and to try to make it through every day in so doing. The district has provided 3 options for parents to choose from. That would be homeschool, where the parents are the teacher, a virtual, where we have blended learning with the teacher and the parent working together, and then regular school in several different risk scenarios. And we're preparing for all 3. And I like what you said, there's about a month. So even though we're planning in green, that could change tomorrow depending on what's happening in our community.
So what are the benefits to planning for green instead of going ahead and preparing for yellow?
Well, most of our time was spent preparing for yellow when you get right down to it. We're spending a lot of time exploring answers to what-if questions. So opening in green is normal school with a lot of modifications to it. So that's actually the easiest to put together. Yellow was challenging, and then we've been working on red also. So we've been working on all 3 for, gosh, even before school was out, trying to predict what will be happening in our nation, in our state, in our community. So in many ways, we're just preparing for the unknown.
Could I add to that? This is Carrie. From an elementary perspective, and I think I'd say from middle school and high school perspectives too, that the benefit of opening in green is that we are with our kids, teachers are with their kids. I don't know if I can say mask to mask. We're like together in a community, and we're able to build communities that way. In yellow, it's working with half of the students, and of course that's good too, but it's not the same as when you have your whole class together. So from a social, emotional, community building perspective, opening in green has some really significant benefits to not just our kids, but our schools, our teachers.
And so if we, and I guess I should probably do some disclosures here before moving on. So I work under contract with the school district as a drama coach, and my wife is on the school board, and I'm also a parent and an educator myself. So I feel really super privileged right now, and I'm probably going to be asking questions and speaking from a position of privilege when we talk about these things. And other families may not share that same privilege. I was looking through the packet last night, and that came in the mail for parents to fill out, or for guardians to fill out for their kids. And there is a lot of, I don't know if assumption is the right word, but there's a lot of expectations put on parents, even in green, but then even more so in yellow, then, you know, even more so in red. So how are you handling or how are you thinking about issues of like equity and when it comes to instruction delivery in your various school sites?
Well, I think equity has been an underlying foundation in all of our discussions to ensure that every student has the opportunity to reach their potential. And each area has its challenges. It's easiest for us to ensure equity when all kids are in school and we have a traditional program. And so green provides that opportunity. We can make sure youngsters are fed. We can provide the support that they need. We can use the professional expertise of our teachers to respond to the individual needs of each child, whether they're social, emotional, instructional, even hunger and clothes. As we move down the line, we have to increase our partnership with parents. And one of the things that we learned last spring is that because we had to jump so quickly to a blended or a virtual model, there wasn't a lot of time to train parents and to work with parents to help them understand the curriculum that we were using, to provide the support necessary. So one of our goals as we move into a new year is to take time to bring parents in as partners, as equal partners. And so every school will be scheduling parent training to explain the curriculum. We've modified our curriculum so it's that we can partner with parents. It's more understandable, that it doesn't require so much training, and yet it still achieves the same goals. So we're working, that's been a major factor, is to really bring parents on as partners. We've added active translation in Spanish and Tagalog. We're communicating in both languages. Indeed, the Facebook Live forum that we'll be doing tonight, we'll be doing synchronous translation into Tagalog and Spanish for families. So we're really reaching out to families in a new level of partnership. And one of the value added, or the positives that's coming from this, is this kind of relationship is something that we should have really worked with before to really bring parents into that partnership. The research indicates that the two greatest factors in the success of a child is first their parents and then a teacher. And if we can find ways to work together that will outlast this pandemic, then we believe that we'll make great strides for helping children achieve their full potential.
And you actually kind of broached into one of my questions, which is what have you learned from last spring, and what lessons, and what are you applying? How are you applying that today?
This is Todd Burton from Kodiak Middle School. One thing that we have heard from last spring was that as we moved into that red, that at least at the middle school level, what I'm hearing is that the seven subjects, the seven periods, was a bit much. And so we're working to create more of a focus on our four core classes, really scaling back homeworks and things, and just trying to make it much more manageable for our students, our staff, and our parents.
And if I could piggyback on that, this is Neil Heck from Kodiak High School. That was one of the other reasons why we went to a four-period semester schedule, is for the high school, we want to do very similar things, focus on less, but go deeper in our instruction. And at the high school, it's about credits. And for us at the high school, we can't, when we go into yellow or red, we can't trim back those things because our students are taking electives for credit and out of choice. So for us, we're starting off in a four period in preparation for the unknown, for the preparation of red. So that's a lot of our planning is we're starting off in green, but we're also planning for that unknown red. So we have all our ducks in a row if we do go to red, if or when.
So and this question came in from Facebook. Mm-hmm. So the high school is going to a four classes per semester.
Correct. Yes. So a student will get one credit at the end of each semester per class.
And at the middle school right now, the plan is still for seven subjects and not doing following the high school.
Yep. Correct. Okay. And if I could just elaborate just a little bit of the reason why. We looked very closely at a four-period semester for our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade students. And we just, you know, the further we looked into it, the more we realized that with that age group, it would be much more beneficial for them to have exposure to English, math, science, and social studies throughout the school year. Because if you can imagine with me, if you will, a student does pretty well in math that first semester, but as a result, they're no longer going to receive math instruction from late January all the way until early September of the next year. And just for that age bracket, we just didn't feel that that would set them up for success.
Now, we even see that at the college level. Students who graduate with all their math credits from the high school, if they take even 1 year away from math before coming back to college or taking college math, the regression is huge, and it does. So, Neil, could you speak to how that will be handled?
Yes, another piece to it also is the logistics of student movement. In the middle school, they're grouped together, kind of cohorted by grade level. At the high school, we might have a student or students come in and go to first period. After that, they're to the winds. These students are going here. So it makes it difficult if we ever did have a situation where we had someone test positive in the high school, trying to trace back. And, it's less contact, less movement in the hallways. There's only four transitions between classes. So we're trying to minimize those logistical pieces. We're also offering at the high school what's called academic pursuits. It's a old school study hall fashion, but there's a project specialist in there to assist students who need those extra supports. So, going semester to semester is going to be, it's going to be interesting because students are going to be in class for 80 minutes. So part of our professional development at the beginning of the school year before the students even come back is going into how to teach in 80 minutes compared to what we were doing before. So mm-hmm. That's another component.
And I'd like to add, too, from the elementary perspective, this is Carrie Irons. One of the things that really, we have four elementary schools in town, and they're all unique, and they're all really great schools. And one of the things that happened for us last year was that we learned the power of being together, of collaboration, and we did more than we've ever done before, with collaborating amongst our teachers. And that, I think, has really helped set us up in a really positive way for what lies ahead. And what lies ahead is a lot of unknowns, but if we can work together collaboratively with our four elementary principals, and with who all of whom have different strengths and different areas of focus, but together we make a really powerful team. And that collaborative force, also with our teachers, it's really going to help us define areas that need to be focused on and help us focus on the instruction that our kids are going to need in the fall.
Have class caps changed at any level from elementary up to high school? The number of students in classroom student caps, have those changed at all? I had heard that maybe some of these bigger classes will be cut down to maybe 10 Again, these are, I'm just bringing in things that I hear, and so, and this is why we're here, to kind of correct some of these things. And then how, you know, and then what, well, we can get to the staffing question later, but what class sizes?
I'll chime in on that. This is Neil Heck from Kodiak High School. Some of our classes will go down in size. We're not going to cap them at 10, but it depends on what level we're in. As we go through the classroom, and we did this the other day, myself and the assistant principal from the high school, we went through and measured the classroom and saw what we could do with 3 to 6 feet. And, you know, a large majority of our classes will meet that. We're evaluating different areas to put students, you know, especially if we're in yellow or if we're in red. And another component of this, as Dr. Ledoux had said before about the packet, we may be having students go from the high school, middle school, elementaries that decide to go virtual school. So that's going to bring our numbers down. And as we move in closer to Friday, we'll know how many more of those students have chosen that option or homeschool option. And that will put a large impact on our school enrollment and our class sizes.
Last week, we sent out 1,400 packets to families. And within those packets was a request for parents to let us know what mode of instruction they would prefer, homeschool, remote blended, and regular school. So far today, we have 66 families who have filled out the packets, and we have drop boxes that we've installed at every school. So parents can respond online. They can fill out the form that we sent them and put it in a drop box. And we will know a lot more information this weekend. In fact, we expect to be working over the weekend trying to make sense of what we're finding out from parents.
And do you have a sense of, I mean, how is that tracked with other districts, right? The Anchorage School District, their in-person student count, they're estimating is down 20%, between 10%, 20%. Is that something we might expect here?
I think in talking to superintendents across the state, they're very concerned about the loss of student enrollment. But on the other hand, Anchorage is opening up in red because of their epidemiology of their community. And so I think parents are having a hard time working through that at this point in time. In Kodiak, though, the number of cases of community transmission are very, very low. In fact, the fact that we're even proposing opening in green is really a celebration of our community's effort to keep it out of our town. And, of course, that could change tomorrow. But, I expect that we'll keep most of our students in one of those modes. We're offering three choices, which is very, very difficult for us to do logistically. But we think that we want to provide as many options for parents as we can. It's a real tough time. There's high anxiety in our community among parents. There's lots of conflicting information out there. And we believe that it's important to us to give parents options. And so we'll find that out this weekend when we look at the counts.
And I have a follow-up for that, but I want to come back to the student class size at the elementary and middle school level. Is that staying the same in green? No changes to that?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that. We're looking at our numbers, and we too have been walking our building and measuring our class sizes and trying to figure out best fits for those higher populous, you know, classes.
Like English, math.
English, math.
The four cores that you're talking about.
Yep, trying to keep them lower, because historically our class sizes have been on the more on the larger side, mm-hmm. at the middle school. So working with our counselors, we're going to do everything that we can to help spread that out and try to fall within that 3 to 6 foot range as we measure and take a look at things.
Mm-hmm. And at the elementary level as well, we're all looking at our classrooms. We're all looking at enrollment. We don't have all the answers yet, of course, but we're thinking about that all the time. We're putting in, we have, shields to put between students. We have that 3 to 6 foot distance that we're thinking about all the time, possibly moving furniture. We're working, not knowing actual numbers makes it a little bit challenging, but we're thinking about that all the time. We don't have a plan because we don't know numbers at this point. We don't really know about how we might lower those numbers, but I think that we're going to be okay as we move into starting school.
Larry, you had mentioned that this is a high anxiety time for students, for families, for teachers and schools for sure. To what extent is the school district and the various school sites and teachers and even the curriculum department talking about making this a big old teachable moment for not just for ourselves but for the students? There is a curriculum I looked at over the weekend that Johns Hopkins University has put out. It's like five different modules about that you can incorporate into your classes. There's a physics module about how masks work. There's a math module about how pandemic spread. There's obviously it's Johns Hopkins, so they're based mostly in sciences. So what have been kind of the conversations about not just about mask training and hand washing, which we really got into last spring, but what are some of the conversations that you've heard with teachers and parents about integrating this as a big old teachable moment for everyone?
So Jared, this is Neil Hecht again from Kodiak High School. At the high school, within our daily schedule, we're going to have a 25-minute advisory daily, as long as we're in green, and then that'll transition over to Monday once we go to yellow and red. But we're going to be focusing on things from social-emotional to hygiene to incorporating different parts of just how this pandemic is impacting our students. And at the high school, it's a little different because the conversations can be more in-depth, but we're going to be having conversations during those 25 minutes daily to bring some of these things up. Matter of fact, at 9 o'clock this morning, I have a team working on some come back to school lesson plans that our teachers will be doing during that first week and beyond to focus on all these pieces to it, and focusing more so on our social emotional and just going from there. And we'll change up those lesson plans as we need to focus on different things as the year progresses.
Yes, and hi, this is Todd Burton at the middle school as well. We do have advisory built in, I'm very proud to say, every day this year as well. We have set up a schedule where we are designing lunches to have one grade level per lunch, again, to sort of cohort by grade level. But along with those lunches, we're building in time for advisory of up to 40 minutes every day, so we can really, really significantly look at SEL, possibly have some time to pull students out, work on some extra academic items and things if they're struggling. And with this schedule that we are designing now, I feel very good about the options we have to support our students in every way.
Yeah, and at the elementary level too, we have already built into our schedule during a normal year time for morning meetings or time for class meetings for kids to be interacting with each other and interacting with the positive adults in their lives in really positive ways. And that's an important component as we move into this year, this extraordinary year, in all of the different risk levels, that's important. And we found from last year that was a part that kept our kids connected with each other and with their classroom teacher, and that was hugely important. I also want to add, though, that when you talk about next year and how that will look, we have a lot of concern about at the elementary level about making sure that our kids are readers. We have instruction that we can't we have to stay really, really very, very deeply focused on to make sure that our kids we do what we can to catch them up from last year, and that we provide those opportunities for instruction. And our focus at this year will be on on small group instruction, which we know is really effective with getting our kids to in that circumstance where they're getting what they need. The instruction is targeted on their individual needs. Mm-hmm. So accelerated growth is really important as we move ahead this year, and small group instruction is one of the ways we're going to do that in any of the risk levels that we're talking about.
Going through this, and you know, speaking as an English teacher, I always knew the value of literacy, but not just general literacy, but the value of a scientific literacy, mathematical literacy is so hugely important right now, and training people to read data and read and think critically about data and generalizations derived from data. So, thank you, Carrie. I really like that. That was good. Keep that going. I don't want to forget Jeff and Kim in the room here. Can you explain, again, very briefly, the scope of your work, because you have a kind of a diverse kind of scope in your work, and how the plans have been affecting some of the work you're doing?
Yeah. Kim Saunders here, and I work in early childhood services as well as special education. Jeff and I collaborate in that area specifically, and then have other duties as assigned, as we like to say, in the district, but working really hard to make sure that our students that are served under special programs or have specific needs within the district are being thought of continuously. When you ask that equity question, you know, I try to be someone who is constantly trying to think about the range of student need in our district and how our plans are specifically addressing and be evolving so that we are best representing all students. It's been a challenge. It's going to continue to be a challenge. But what I know is that the district stands ready to address individual needs and we'll work with families, as always, through the IEP process to try to do our best to design programs that will be this dream of fluidity between levels if we need it, which is a daunting task on the best day, to be totally honest with you. But also something I feel like we're up to the challenge for. We have a great team coming back in special services. All of our certified staff are coming back. And that just shows a commitment to their students first and foremost and to their families second. So I'm excited about that and feel really hopeful today, to be honest with you, and also in early childhood as well. So we're working hard.
How many, if it's off the top of your head, how many students have IEPs in our district?
Go ahead.
Off the top of my head, I would say about 350 students.
I can't even envision what percentage is that of.
And I think 350 is somewhat high. Our percentage is right around 14.5% of the district that is served with an individual education program.
Okay.
There are also students that are served under Section 504 that is also part of our responsibility in the Special Services Department. I would add, if I could, just in terms of some of the scope of our work, Kim and I oversee the early childhood program for the school district. We oversee all of the special services programs, which includes special education, students that are served with a 504 that need accommodations or modifications. We also oversee our gifted program in the school district. And then also we work with those students that are in transition in between homes and making sure that we're responsive to the needs of all of our students. And I think that the one, I think about the process we've been through since last March, and I feel like right now in the district that it's an opportunity for both parents and the district personnel and our community to collaborate as a whole. And what we're really looking at are what are the individual needs of each student in the district and in our community, and how are we going to partner with those entities to meet those needs? In some regards, it's a really exciting time to say, what do we need to do for this student, and then make that happen. And I think one of the things, to an earlier question that I learned from last spring, is we can have the best laid plan, and I think we have some really good plans in place, but we also have to be ready to adjust to the feedback that comes back from the community and from our parents, because we partner with our families. And so when that feedback comes in, we have to listen to that, we have to acknowledge that, and we have to find a way to say, how do we change this so that it meets that individual student's needs, regardless of if they have a program or don't have a program, you know, in place for them.
If you're just joining us, we're here on the Lowdown with members from the Kodiak Island Borough School District talking about school reopening plans. And I got a couple. I got a couple questions that came in. We might just do like a little rapid fire on some of these. So how fluid are the options for families if their child is uncomfortable or if parents are unhappy with the selected option? So parents decide they want to try out virtual school, and 2 weeks in, they're like, nope, this is not going to happen. I want my kid back in school, assuming we're still, you know, level green. How fluid is that going to be for parents and families?
I think it's our intent to make it as fluid as possible. However, we're going to be making staffing decisions this coming week, and it's important for parents to make a good choice the first time, because if we can accommodate a change, we will, but if we cannot because of numbers in classes and the availability of support staff, we may not be able to respond to any request. Generally speaking, when the principals have gotten together, they're looking at changes after the first 2 weeks at the end of the trimester at the elementary schools. At the high school and middle school, it's really going to be dependent on numbers. I think the most critical choice parents need to look at is if they choose to homeschool. That's a difficult one to transition from because of the stipends and some of the materials that parents order. So we stand ready. The principals are back. If parents have questions, they should call their school and talk to the principals, the administrators there, and they would be happy to discuss every one of the choices that are available and, you know, the protocols that define that choice.
Okay.
Absolutely. Like to add, too, that please remember that this is a work in progress, and in many cases, we don't have specific answers for you yet. And we're working really, really hard to know what those questions are and to be able to answer as best we can. But a lot of the questions are still works in progress, if that's fair to say.
Oh, sure. let's see. I got Carrie potted up. So this is a question for Carrie. Will the elementary schools still do? Oh, okay. Will the elementary schools still do exemptions for families wishing to attend a different school than they're currently zoned for?
Okay, that's a bigger question, answer than I can give. But right now, we are not looking to change that system.
Okay.
To change the system as it has been.
So whatever the status quo has been, that's okay.
Yes. We are receiving requests for waivers, and that process will continue.
Okay. All right. When students arrive at school, there is always a large group of kids together. Always. Because sometimes it's cold, right? A large group of kids together, up to no good. No, I'm just kidding. These are good kids. What mitigation plans are in place for that time period? Are we looking at staggered arrivals, staggered departures?
So this is Neil Hecht at Kodiak High School. Some of the things we're looking at doing, and again, it's still a work in progress, of changing the time that we open the door. We're also going to have chairs throughout the building. We have wide enough hallways. We have designated locations that are maintaining social distancing, because we still want students to be able to come in, get breakfast, be there in the building, because some of that social interaction is huge for that age of students. So as long as we can do it safely, we'll start off. And we'll make adjustments as we see things that are working and are not working. So we still plan to allow students to come in, and I'm going to just say 8 o'clock for now. We'll take temperatures as the students come in. We'll have a process for that. And we'll have designated locations around the school with chairs and stickers on the floor.
And the middle school is not nearly, I've been in the middle school a lot, and there's not nearly as much room.
That is true. We are looking at creating 3 different entry points, one for each grade level, to try to continue with that spacing. And then we are also looking to stagger our release as the end of the day approaches and kids are heading out to the buses. It's still a work in progress. We're more than likely looking at opening our doors at 8:20, the same as years past. But this is something that, you know, we're still investigating. And as I get my grade level teams and teachers back, we'll be having those conversations to look at some of the finite details about best practices to help keep our students safe and separated appropriately.
This is Carrie Irons at the elementary perspective. We have 4 different buildings and they're all set up differently. But believe me, the 4 of us, town elementary principals, are talking about this pretty constantly. And we're actually planning to meet at each other's schools to kind of go over our individual plans. These are things that are, these logistical questions are the things that are waking us up at night and are keeping us from getting back to sleep. And it is what it is. It's just, it has taken a lot of thought and collaborative conversations to try to figure out how it's going to work best. I know that at North Star, we have several different places that we can have kids enter the building. We have kids coming for breakfast. We have kids coming who usually come before school so they can play on the playground. We have kids coming, getting dropped off anytime from starting at about 7:40 until school starts officially at 8. So we have a lot of people coming at different times and in different waves. And we are thinking very carefully about how that's going to look. And I feel like we're going to have a really good plan that will keep kids safe. It will keep teachers safe. I'm hoping that will be available to share with families soon.
Jared, if I may, this is Kim Saunders. I think it's also the beginning of that conversation for family partnership, because really this is a tone in which kids come to school and understand that these things are being asked of them to change their behaviors, to keep their distance from their friends for the greater good so that we can keep schools up and running. And if families can help us explain that before kids even get to our building, that's one of the biggest conversations we've had, which is we're all going to have to do this together. And if kids, you know, I talk a lot in early childhood about airplane arms and will they understand what that means and explain it to me like I'm 5, right? Why do we need to do that? And why are we going to be asked to wash our hands and have our temperature taken? And if families need help with how do I address this with my student, I think the schools are a great place to ask for that. But those conversations now, my number one most asked question is, how am I going to get my child to wear a mask, right? If they practice now, for instance, one of the things I read is every time they're on a screen, put them on a mask, right? They all love the screen. They love their iPads. They love the phones. And if you pair something they love with practice wearing their mask, they might be more successful when they come to school and are asked to keep it on all day. So I think some of those pieces we can really work together to make that whole process easier.
Absolutely. And trying different styles of masks, right, too, to find the style that is going to be best for your child. It will be really super helpful.
Yeah.
And
thanks, Kim.
And masks are required for everyone except for kindergartners and first graders, or is it K-2?
It's optional for K-1,
optional for K-1.
But certainly encouraged if possible.
Mm-hmm. My 5-year-old, he's a rising kindergartner, and he'll wear the mask. He loves the mask. We started early to make sure that but you're absolutely right. It's finding one that he likes. There's some that he does, some that he doesn't, and so when you find that right one, it's so nice. It's really, really nice. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a lot about the schools on the road system. Let's talk a minute about our remote sites and village schools. Some of these options, they don't quite have the infrastructure, the bandwidth for virtual learning. And they're also opening under green. Are they following similar or the same mitigation plans and plans that we have here for the schools in town?
Our rural principal, Peggy Zuyak, has been involved in all of our work groups that we've had working over the summer, as have members from our rural communities. It's safe to say that they'll be following all of our protocols that we've developed to keep kids and staff safe. One of the differences is that we'll be working very closely with tribal councils, municipal leadership, whatever governance our communities are using to make decisions. So everything that you see in our town schools, they receive the same packets in rural schools, except that we have a much closer partnership with the community than we do within town.
And how have the conversations been going on with the Coast Guard also? You know, the Coast Guard, a major presence here, and they have their own set of expectations for their personnel and for their families. Have you run into any roadblocks there, or what have those conversations been like? Because that's basically Peterson and a huge chunk of the middle school and high school.
Well, Michelle St. Clair, our principal at Peterson, also is responsible to liaison with the Coast Guard. I meet as part of the Emergency Services Council with both captains from the Coast Guard base, and they're aware of our protocols that we're developing. They've been very supportive. I believe in the very near future we'll be hosting meetings out at the Coast Guard base where the principal and Jeff and Kim, Special Services, will provide an opportunity to talk to Coast Guard personnel who are new to Kodiak. Generally speaking, what they find out right away is that we provide a lot of services and that they don't normally see in other assignments around the nation. Mm-hmm. So we have a very close relationship. They've been very supportive, and our principal is a former, Coast Guard spouse, mm-hmm. and very familiar with Coast Guard operations.
All right. What about classes where there is a lot of aspiration, choir, band, maybe not so much orchestra, but I don't know. I've seen some people work up a sweat. Orchestra, physical education. I'll throw in theater arts in there too. There's a little blurb in there in the packet. So for listeners who don't have kids and didn't receive the packet, what do those classes look like?
So Jared, this is Neil Hecht again from Kodiak High School. I'll just go through the list actually. Physical education. The recommendation is to get our students out of the gym, and you know, Kodiak weather is uncertain at times. So preparing for that is we're looking at a model to where it will be a virtual component where the students would take an online physical education course, health and fitness, as well as doing a 90-hour contact log, a PE log. This PE log is something that we've done in the past, whether it was with our homeschool or virtual learning academy. Choir, it's an interesting one. Right now, we currently do not have a choir teacher, but in the choir class, if I remember reading the regulations correctly, the students need to be 10 feet apart as they're singing. Mm-hmm. So that in itself presents some challenges. We're still looking at some options. Maybe it'll be something where students can do things outside the school day. But again, if anyone out there listening has any experience in choir and they'd like to apply, I'm doing a recruiting plug right now. So, please apply. When it comes to band, I've been working with Dale Lotka, our band teacher. For the high school setting, he's looking at doing it outside the school day, starting at 4 p.m. We've been in great conversations about that, to where It might be 2 days a week he pulls the trumpets, 2 days a week for an hour, 30 minutes, whatever, he pulls another group. They're doing it online because just with the brass instruments and, as you were saying, the saliva and the working up. So, you know, there's a lot of these components that we're really looking at, and we're going to attempt every measure possible to have the same courses we had before. They just might look a little different. And, you know, we have a great staff that has brainstormed some ideas. You know, some of our hands-on classes, we'll be looking at those too. How can we do those virtual? Or if we can't do those virtual, we'll be working through all those plans as the year gets closer. I say that even though it's about 29 days away, but we're doing all we can to have wonderful opportunities for our students.
Yeah. At the elementary level, you rely on, music, choir, sometimes other teachers coming into the classroom, sometimes even parent volunteers coming into the classroom. What are the expectations or what are the plans there? Can parents come in and volunteer for their classes? Are you going to have I did a teaching artist thing for North Star last. So what is it? What are the plans about parents and other kinds of experts coming in for additional instruction?
Yeah, that's a great question. We are, you know, volunteers are like they help run our schools and they make our schools more community focused and they're a great thing. Believe me, they're a great thing. We are about to begin an extraordinary year, and those topics have to change this year. So temporarily, as we deal with this pandemic, we aren't going to be welcoming outside adults from the outside into our buildings. It's really unfortunate, but it is the reality of what we're dealing with right now. So our buildings will have lots of signage to help support families with that. Our offices our office complexes, suites in our buildings will have plexiglass shields so that if necessary for interacting with families, with parents, we can do that. But we're not planning on having adults from the community in our classrooms this year.
So if there can go in the buildings, what are the opportunities that parents and the public to volunteer and to help out? Is there anything that we can do?
Oh, that's a great question.
Other than, you know, teaching the kids at home and, you know, but, you know, to support the school itself, the PTA, PTO, you know, kind of whole element and public element.
Right. Yeah. Good question. I haven't really thought about that a whole lot yet. But we do have to have an outlet for that. We have incredible families, you know, we have people who really want to support what we're doing, and they're not just parents. We have a lot of people out there who really want to support education in our community, and we deeply appreciate that. And please don't interpret this like temporary restriction as something that we really are enthusiastic about, because we're really not. But I think that every school will have a way for families to participate, for people to participate. I know I'm not answering you really specifically but it's really important, and we really want that to continue. We'll find a way.
I think, hi, this is Larry. It's very important for parents to know that we are trying to develop safe schools during this pandemic. And one of the ways to do that is to really restrict entrance to the building. We want to keep our kids safe, and we love volunteers. Each building will be setting up a safety committee that will meet weekly, and that will involve parents and teachers and students, depending on the grade level. We get many suggestions from parents that start with, have you thought about this? And many times we haven't thought about that. So we really need parents to have a close relationship with their teachers and principals so that we have sort of a group think, you know, the wisdom of a crowd. So as we move forward together. But we've instituted, gosh, a legion of safety protocols in school. So when kids come back into green, it won't look like it used to when they left. But kids will be able to see one another. They will be able to reestablish social relationships that we all know is very important. To a certain extent, the social distancing guidelines that we have is similar to pushing water upward instead of down. We're fighting against a force of nature. Kids want to gather together. They want to talk. They want to interchange, whether they're in kinders that want to hug one another or high school kids that may want to hug one another for different reasons. But we're going to have to work with families and students to change that and keep people safe. And so going back to the bus question, when kids are unloading, it's safe to say that we'll be working with young people and parents from the moment, well, when they line up at the bus stop until they leave and go home, to do the best we can to help them stay apart. But the only way we can do that is to work with the kids, to have them understand why we're doing it. And I know we're looking, this weekend we were reviewing social stories for children to help them understand what this pandemic is all about, to understand social distancing and masks. And we've got some great ones that we'll be posting on our district website for parents to use and help kids work through this. But I expect that after the first day of school that we'll have incidences where people will see secondary kids grouped up closer than we want them to be. We're going to do the best we can, but they're rather resilient in their efforts to get together.
No. One way, and I think you put a plug for this in the packet, one way that if the public is interested in helping out is you can become a substitute. And I guess this kind of leads to a general question about just staffing in general. How has staffing and recruiting been going? But here's your time also to plug for substitutes, or if you need aides, how?
Yeah, that's a fabulous opportunity for us to, you know, I know Neil was doing a little recruiting earlier for a choir teacher. I think the district is always looking and trying to recruit substitutes, and this year is no different than any other year, and we are actively looking to build that pool up, and there are many different opportunities to engage in, whether that's helping out as a day person or it's subbing in a classroom, whether it's building specific that you have an interest in subbing in, and that would be a way for a parent that would love to be able to volunteer to get into their child's school would be to become a substitute, and that opportunity exists throughout the district. Kim alluded to earlier that in special services we really held on to a lot of our certificated staff this year, and I'm really thankful for that, and we have an incredible team. And we also have incredible opportunities for people that are interested in becoming a paraprofessional. And we are actively hiring staff for all of our schools and all of our locations. And again, if a family has an interest in the past as being a volunteer, you know, it's another opportunity for you to get into a school. And we would encourage you to apply for those positions that are on the district's website.
All right. A question that's come in just for the middle school. Will middle school students enrolled in virtual school have a different teacher for each class? I think basically what their question is, what does a virtual school day look like for a middle school student?
Thank you. This is Todd. That's a great question. Right now, if we are in yellow, which is part-time face-to-face, part-time virtual, our plan is to still have our students meeting with their teachers, period by period. And so if they are in virtual school, it's my understanding that they will have their own set of teachers outside of coming to and starting with us in green.
So it's safe to say that a middle school student who is in virtual, depending on the grade, will have a different teacher. for each of their core classes and the electives. It will not necessarily be the same teacher that they would have if they were attending the middle school.
Because we have, there are, because you need to staff those virtual classes. And so you're currently working with teachers right now on how to delineate those, or, you know, how to distribute those assignments. So I think that might be what the question is getting to. Yeah, you might have one teacher in face-to-face, but then a different one when you get into a virtual yellow or red kind of scenario?
No. Okay. If a student starts with us in green and we transition to yellow or red, they will still have...
Same teachers.
The same teachers.
All right. And then let's see... When and if a school has to convert to online or virtual because of code red, will teachers create their own lesson plans, or the school district office facilitate those lesson plans on behalf of the teacher? Will teachers be required to be in the classroom while teaching remotely, or will they be allowed to teach from anywhere?
So this is Neil from the high school, and I'll speak from the high school's perspective. What we did is, right whenever we started planning, is we went to a living curriculum, very similar to what we use online currently. Two main curriculums will be APEX and eDynamics. And that way the teacher can start out in green teaching with this curriculum. We transition to yellow or red. They will still be following the same curriculum, going unit to unit, chapter to chapter, whatever the case might be. And that way it's a smooth transition, seamless transition as we move into yellow or red. So that kind of sets it up a little bit easier mode for the high school. I'll pass off to the middle school and elementary and have their perspective.
Thank you. This is Todd. We at the middle school are also using APEX and eDynamics for electives. And so, again, we're excited to offer that ability to have a seamless transition regardless if it's green, yellow, or red.
And this is Carrie at the elementary level. This was really driving the whole conversation about instruction, of what happens if we go from green, where the kids are in the classrooms with their teachers, and then we have to go partially or completely virtual. So in order to have that happen effectively for the kids, we have to have instruction that's easy to move back and forth between those different ways of instruction. So instead of having a curriculum that's designated, this is how we teach math, this is how we teach language arts, we've gone back to a focus on what is it the kids need to know. So those are the standards. So we're using the standards to guide the curriculum. We had a team of teachers, principal, coaches work this summer on looking at the standards for those core areas and identifying what are called the critical content standards, the most important ones that kids are needing to master before moving to the next grade level. And then from those critical standards, the learning targets, specific learning targets that will guide the teacher in designing the lesson plans to teach the standards that the kids need. So that's a collaborative process, and it's one of the things that's really exciting about moving forward this year, is that the focus is being worked on, or will be worked on, with grade level teams. So they'll be looking at those learning targets for, say, math, and figuring out how to best meet those learning targets. And that will be done. That's already actually been planned out for the year. And will be more specifically planned for each trimester of school. So whether a child is in the classroom with the teacher or at home, working virtually, those same standards that week will be of the area of focus. Instruction will be on those same standards, those same learning targets, and the materials that we'll have to teach those will all be focused on those same targets. We do have resources that will be in every family will have, every child will have hard copy workbooks that will be in their, we're calling them to-go boxes. Those will be at each child will have his or her own, and the materials in those boxes will support instruction that is going on regardless of the type of instruction, whether it's remote or in person.
And with like Apex and eDynamics, so these virtual teachers, these are all certified teachers, but not necessarily certified in the state of Alaska. Like eDynamics is from British Columbia, I think. Yeah, Neil.
So this is the curriculum that we're going to be using, but it's going to be our teachers. So if it's, for example, an English teacher would be using Apex English 10 or English 9, 11, 12, but it will be our high school teachers doing it. When it comes to eDynamics, the same thing. We're going to use the curriculum, the software, the program, but the teacher ahead of time will be getting trained in the curriculum, and they'll be the teacher. It's not, we're not outsourcing it to somebody that's somewhere else. It's our teachers in our buildings, or if it's virtual, it's our teachers within our school district. So, go ahead.
I think it's important to add that the eDynamics and the Apex are just foundation curricula. The teacher is not there just to facilitate that curriculum. That just provides sort of a living curriculum. The teachers will all be doing what's value added. And one of the opportunities that we hope will take place because of the change in the amount of time per class and the fact that there's a foundation curriculum is that teachers will be able to move more into thematic, problem-based learning where kids are actually involved in applying their knowledge. And by ensuring that every teacher has a foundation program will allow them to spend less time doing the nitty-gritty of lesson design and be able to really start moving into what we really want teachers to do throughout the district, and that's help kids apply their knowledge to real situations that have meaning. And so we're hoping that what we learn in this following year will be able to carry on well beyond the COVID year into really changing the way we teach and deliver instruction to kids.
Ooh, big gust of wind there. And I got to say, I looked at the classes and that eDynamics, that eDynamics will be offered here, and there is a Lord of the Rings one. Yes. And I almost thought I would pull like one of those 1990s movie tropes where you've got like the middle-aged journalist pretend to be a high school student for some kind of expose. And I was going to do that just to take that class. that would be great. That would be great. We got a couple, just a couple minutes left, and I think I just have one more big question, then we'll kind of just open it up and there's any last things you want to say. What kind of new do no harm policies or practices or pedagogy have been put in place at the end of the school year last year, the high school, and I'm not sure the middle school did this, kind of changed the grading system a little bit to try to accommodate for that do no harm because of, you know, everything just went wacky last March. Have any of those do no harm kind of policies carried over, or is this just we're trying to do school and evaluation and grading and behavior as normal? What has anything changed in that regard? At any level, but
so yeah. I'll start for the high school. You know, part of it is, as we were just talking about, that living curriculum, teacher value added, we're going to start off differently than how we ended last year, and that's where some of the lessons learned. You know, we need a basic foundation of curriculum, minimize the number of locations or logins that students have to go to find resources. So a lot of this is going to come from training during our extended professional development at the beginning of the year. You know, it's also going to be where here's a curriculum that's going to be sequential and allow our teachers to go through and, as Dr. Ledoux said, not have to really dig into the nitty-gritty and spend more time on those individual students and individual activities, problem-based. Also, the advisory time, that's going to allow our teachers to also have a cohort of students to be able to check their progress and see how things are going. As the semester progresses along, it allows the administration and counselors to reach out to students and check in on them. You know, we learned a lot of lessons at the end of last school year. So I think we're going to be in a much better place. Again, with our staff and everyone on board, we'll just move forward, and I think we'll be in a great place.
Yeah. And I would agree with Neil. Hello, this is Todd. You know, it's something, you know, that we are definitely, you know, taking a look at. This is a new curriculum, and so I believe it's still evolving how we're going to actually, you know, see how things play out and just how well our plans are going to, you know, we'll see how this unfolds. So we're still trying to see how this evolves.
Yeah, and this is Carrie. And from, you know, from the elementary perspective, we have a sense of urgency that we lost a lot of time last year. Mm-hmm. You know, our kids were out of school for a trimester, a third mm-hmm. of the year. And now we're beginning a new year with students having been out of school for an unprecedented 6 months. we just have that sense that, you know, we have a lot to make up for, and we need to be very urgent, you know, focused on the learning needs of our elementary students. We can't have a cohort of students who haven't had the experiences that they need to be successful. Mm-hmm. And that is an equity issue, and it's an issue that you know is on our minds all the time. So we're hoping that we can build these partnerships with families that are going to help us move forward together with the learning for our kids. And also knowing that we have to, it's kind of the dilemma of our time, right? That we have to find that balance of what our kids need in terms of their social emotional states, as well as those academic needs, and those are bigger than they've ever been before.
Or this has definitely shown us that they're bigger than we even thought that they were. We thought they were big before. But it's definitely revealing. I mean, even at the college level, it's revealing cracks in our system, in the higher education system, cracks in my classes and my own instruction, for sure. And we went virtual, you know, about the same time at the college level, and it's been so long since I have actually kind of tapped into even the social emotional elements of college students, which as a college instructor, you know, you're not really expected to do that, right? You're the sage on the stage, you deliver the lecture. But this has definitely, you know, revealed some things about my own pedagogy that I would like to change. And I'm on sabbatical this fall, so I'm going to be working on that. So it's nice.
Cool.
So we have a few minutes. I mean, we could take all morning if you want, but I'm sure our audience probably wants us to get to performance today. So let's kind of, if we want to go around the room, and if there's any last thing you want to pitch, or last thing that you just want to say or clarify, something that I haven't brought up, this is your chance.
All right. This is Neil Hecht from Kodiak High School. Just, you know, take a look at the KIBSD website. I know they're updating information from time to time. Check your mail, those of you that got the packets in on Saturday. This week on Wednesday and Thursday, and the information will be going out at the high school, we're going to be meeting with our juniors on Wednesday, our students, and our sophomores on Thursday in the auditorium practicing social distancing from 5 to 6. We'll be doing a mailer as well as a caller for that. So one last thing, recruiting. I mentioned it before, a choir teacher. Anyone out there know anyone that's a choir teacher or would like to have a choir position, as well as any of our other positions in the district? Take a look at the website under employment. So just be patient. A lot of the things that are going on in all of the schools are changing, and, you know, just from state mandates and the health of the community. And if people want us to stay in green, well, wear masks and do social distancing, and hopefully we can stay green as long as possible. I'll pass it off.
Hi, this is Todd at the middle school. You know, really just appreciate this time. And if anyone out there is interested in helping us out with academic pursuits, we do have that position. It's a little bit more of a modified study hall, as Neil alluded to earlier. So that is a way for someone to who enjoys working with students and working with the community, that we could look at a hire there. But I'm just really excited about this opportunity. As I transition from rural schools to the middle school, it has been a very good experience already. Reaching out to our staff, I've just been met with a super high energy, and overwhelmed with how supportive and excited our staff is to meet these challenges. You know, and I'm excited also to let folks know that we do have two full-time counselors at the middle school, and we just got a really great admin team. I can't say enough about Heather Norton and Diane Maples. We are working really hard, and we're excited about this upcoming challenge and this upcoming school year to meet the needs of our parents and our kids.
Hi, Jeff Smith here. I would just remind families that this summer there was a lot of advanced planning that went into this school year, and a lot of folks in the community, a lot of educators coming together and meeting regularly to kind of look at the things that we learned from the spring and how do we adjust those things as we roll into the fall and coming up with plans. But I do want to encourage our parents and our guardians that as the year gets up and running, if you've got questions or comments or concerns, that you certainly reach out to any of your building administration or teachers or any central services staff, just to let them know what's going on and to do that sooner than later so that we can respond to those things as they come up. It's certainly going to be a learning year for all of us as we walk down this road together. I do want to encourage those of you that are interested in subbing or becoming a paraprofessional to certainly look at the district website to look at those opportunities. And I look forward to being in this on this path with you all. So thank you.
Yeah, this is Carrie Irons again. And I guess I have to echo what my colleagues have already said. It's an extraordinary year ahead of us, and there's been a lot of energy and effort that's gone into the point that we're at right now, and we are by no means done with our planning. We are thinking and processing and making adjustments every day as we go. We have a really remarkable leadership at our district level, and we're very, very fortunate that we do. That's going to be helping us move forward. And I think, I guess the thing that makes me feel most optimistic is that we're approaching this as positively as we possibly can. And it's not a negative sense that this is a bad thing. It's a terrible pandemic that we are having to grapple with. But on the other hand, we're approaching it in as positive a way as we can, and I think we're really blessed in that way. I have incredible colleagues at the elementary level. My principal colleagues are amazing, and the whole team is incredible. And we're working together in a way that we've never done before. And I just want one last thing. I just need to add that our teachers are coming back officially on the 24th of August. That's their first official contract day as we begin to plan for the year together as a complete team. And they're amazing, you know. Our teachers are, as Todd said, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of trepidation. about what it's really going to look like. But I think overall, we're in a good place for moving forward. And our families and our kids, I mean, to me, being able to see kids, interact with kids, is that's what I dream about. Those are my positive dreams. So anyway, thank you for this opportunity, Jared, and mm-hmm. we'll keeping optimistic and positive is really what we have to do.
All right, Kim.
Yeah, this is Kim Saunders. Always have some, you know, I keep saying we're too small not to do this well, and I believe that we learned a lot, and we're going to keep learning, and sometimes that's really challenging, but we can get through it, and if families will partner with us, and we can really build a program that benefits kids, I believe that to the core of my being. So I'm excited to be on the team, and it's been a pleasure to be here today.
Okay. Superintendent Ledoux, Dr. Ledoux.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share. We'll be participating in a community forum that the district is sponsoring tonight beginning at 6:30, and you can listen and watch and ask questions on Facebook Live tonight. We'll have a full administrative team, including our nurse, our head nurse, Michelle Adelin, will be there to talk about or to be able to answer any questions you have. We'll do a very short presentation on the programs, and then we'll just take questions. I know that the packet that we sent out will generate hundreds of what-if questions, and we just encourage parents to talk to their principals. They're on staff. Our secretaries are going to be on staff beginning today, I believe, and we're going to do the best we can. Every day I get on the news and I read some new study or report, and it reminds me that there's this is a worldwide pandemic that we're involved with, and Kodiak is really an island right now of calm. And if any school district can open, given the epidemiology and the planning that we've done, it's Kodiak. I want to ensure the public, though, that what drives us to even open is to educate our kids, to give teachers the opportunity to see their faces and for kids to see their peers, and to bond with their teacher, so that if we go to another more restrictive educational program, that the kids will have links that will encourage them to do their work, and that we can tend to their social and emotional needs. To do that, we've got to get to know them and to see them and to be a part of that. And we take this very seriously. The administrative team met for 2 days this past week, and I can share with the public that we're united in purpose, both to educate our young people and to keep them safe. And we take that very, very seriously. We have very, very stringent protocols defined to keep us safe. We have a medical advisory committee that we work with. We're in almost daily contact with the Alaska Department of Health. We have a lot of people helping us make good decisions to keep kids safe. And it's safe to say that we're going to do the best we can to educate kids and take care of our children and our staff. We know that we have staff members that have high anxiety. We know we have parents that have high anxiety, and many young people. And within that environment, we're going to find a pathway to educate our kids and keep us safe. So, and finally, I will say that substituting and being an aide is the new volunteerism in Kodiak. And if you want to volunteer, and I say this in all seriousness, one of the things that would keep us from opening is not having the staff necessary to support the needs of all kids. Currently, we need over 20 aides to open school. We need substitutes that will be able to, more than we've ever needed them before, because we have to anticipate that teachers will have a higher absentee rate in our aides. And we need good people that we can do background checks, that we can train, that can be in our classrooms and be aides. And a lot of people think they can't do that, but many of us here started as substitutes, and we got hooked in working with kids. And I would invite people who have never even given it a thought to think about being an aide. It's very, very rewarding, and We have some of the best aides in the nation working with our kids here. They're dedicated, they're professional, they're knowledgeable, and you can be just like them. So that's what I would have to say. We're in this together. We're, as people have said many times, we're Kodiak strong. And again, it is a celebration that we can even begin to consider opening grain. But if we have to go to another level, we are ready. We have been working all summer. My principals worked all summer long. We had over 100 parents, teachers working on 9 different task work groups to help us plan. And now that parents are asking questions, we'll even be more prepared, because as we find answers to those, we'll know a little bit more every time. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Absolutely. I know that right now it can sometimes feel like we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, and we have to adjust. And I say we, I'm also, as a college educator too, we've had to adjust and adapt. And if there's no more pertinent time for creative thinking than there is right now. So thank you for all the work that you have done, and thanks for coming in on this Monday morning on the Special Lowdown. And so there's the special presentation tonight at 6:30 that will be on the Facebook Live. And I forgot to check with Pam if we're going to try to air it like we aired the previous one here on KMXT. But
yes,
we are. Pam says we are. We are. We are going to air that tonight also. So
translation will be available via the district website. Translation will be available via the district website also live right before that meeting. Similar to how you might stream a school board meeting, you'll see links for both Spanish and Tagalog.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks again. And thanks for listening to The Lowdown. We'll be back on Wednesday with our regular Doc of the Rock edition of The Lowdown. But thanks again to my guests, and have a great day, and good luck out there. Fight the good fight.